titled Parrot, a VM for Dynamic Languages. And Alison is the C and Perl hacker, architect and core developer of Parrot. On the board of directors of the Perl Foundation, co-author of Perl 6 and Parrot Essentials, and founder and president of Onyx Neon Press. She also works for O'Reilly Media, planning the program for their open source convention and keeping a finger on the pulse of technology trends for O'Reilly Media. And over to you.
Thank you. So the core idea of Parrot is to provide a set of tools for compiling dynamic languages. So you can visualize Parrot something like this. So you'd have a series of languages, Python, Perl, PHP, Ruby, all running on top of the same virtual machine. This allows some advantages like sharing libraries between the two languages. It also allows some advantages in embedded environments because you have a much smaller footprint if you can run a single interpreter for multiple different languages than running multiple different interpreters simultaneously. But if you really want to get into the details of Parrot, the goal is something a little bit more like this. One of the things that struck me years ago was how slow the pace of language development is. If you look at languages like Perl 6, some of the most advanced features being added to Perl 6 actually already existed in Lisp 40 years ago. And this is state-of-the-art language development. So some of the reasons that language development is so slow is as we advance the features that we use in dynamic languages, there's a great deal that you have to implement to get a dynamic language working. Things like garbage collection and concurrency, these aren't trivial problems. They take quite a bit of work to solve. So in order to produce a state of the art virtual machine for a dynamic language, you end up developing a lot of just sort of background stuff, grunge stuff, before you ever get to adding interesting new features. So people often never get around to adding interesting new features. So what we want to provide is like the base set. Here's the set of tools. This is the core set of features you need to implement an interesting dynamic language. Get that out of the way. Now, go on and invent something new. Create new features. So I say that the target of Parrot is dynamic languages. What do I mean by a dynamic language? The basic idea is many of the effects that you would expect to happen at compile time in a language like C, in a dynamic language, they happen at runtime. So you can add on to the code base that you're executing on the fly at runtime, either by evaluating subroutine blocks or loading new code that at compile time, the virtual machine didn't know anything about that code, but you load it at runtime and it can change the entire execution pattern of the virtual machine. You can define classes at runtime. You can extend the type system at runtime. You can really, really change the fundamental nature of how the virtual machine is operating, of how the language is interpreted at runtime. That is going to be very annoying. So some of the other things that you expect from a dynamic language, now these are things that really they've been around since Lisp. Higher order functions is the idea that you can actually have a piece of code, and the entire purpose of that piece of code is to accept one piece of code as an argument and return another piece of code to you. Closures, continuations, and coroutines. I'll briefly describe them. A closure is an idea that it's a subroutine that carries around a little bit of data with it everywhere it goes. A continuation is, in a sense, it's like a, it captures a little bit more data. So a continuation can capture the entire state of wherever you are. You can just wrap it up in a package, and at any point you need to get back to that point of execution, you just execute that piece of code, that continuation, and it resets the entire environment. A coroutine is like, it's like a subroutine with a pause button. So you run along through the subroutine, and you get to a certain point, you say, oh, okay, I want to pause here. And you may return a value at that point. The next time you call the subroutine, instead of starting back at the beginning, you start where you left off, and then you keep going. And you can do this multiple times within the subroutine. That may not sound useful, but wait. So when we started the Parrot project, dynamic languages had a little bit of a bad rap. People would look at us and say, why would you even bother creating a virtual machine for a dynamic language? Since then, and partly because of Parrot, partly because of things like Ruby on Rails, dynamic languages have gotten more respect. And now the big virtual machines like JVM and .NET are adding in features to support dynamic languages and, you know, broadly claiming, you know, how great they are because they support dynamic languages. So I really feel like we changed the universe a little bit there by starting something. Another part of the motivation for Parrot is that if you look at the state of compiler tools at the moment, what people end up defaulting to is pretty much Lex and Yak, which, okay, they're good solid tools, but they're pretty much the best that the 1980s had to offer. And there isn't that much change happening. So one of the things we wanted to do is change the market. You know, make it easier to compile languages, but also, you know, set about, instead of trying to create a language with a hammer and nails, you know, start adding some power tools into our toolbox. Portability is a very big goal for Parrot. We aim to run on all the same platforms that Perl runs on, which is like 100 some odd various different architectures. We're not going to try to do all of that for the 1.0 release. We are focusing on a core set of architectures for the 1.0 release, but in the design, even from the very beginning, is the idea that it must be portable. And this isn't portable in the sense that you modify your code a little bit to run on Windows and you modify your code a little bit to run on Linux and a little bit to run on another platform. But, you know, the code that you write should be able to run absolutely everywhere that Parrot can run in exactly the same way. Interoperability is another goal. That's the idea of running a library from Python in your PHP code. This is pretty important. I can't tell you how many times I have been writing a project in one language or another, and I think, well, this is great, but I really wish I had that library from that language. You know, Python has some really good language parsing libraries. Ruby has some very interesting stuff in web display these days. And yet, none of the languages has all of the libraries. And the last thing that really keeps me excited about Parrot is, in a sense, we are driving the pace of new ideas in virtual machines. We have an opportunity here which we're taking full advantage of, to put some interesting theoretical ideas into practice, to take a step beyond what people consider state-of-the-art, which is .NET and JVM, and really take the next step of evolution. I spend huge amounts of time like reading research papers and like trying this out. Let's say, well, that was a very nice theory, but no. And well, this is an interesting idea. It looks really good. Now we have to change these five things before you can actually put it into practice. Or I can't believe that people threw this idea out in the 1960s because it required more than 64K of RAM.
Back to virtualization. Can you be more specific what you mean by that?
By virtualization?
Meaning this is the language for virtualization. That's the abstract.
Driving innovation?
Right.
Oh, for virtualization. I don't remember saying it was a... By virtualization, do you mean running?
I think that's what you said, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Virtual machine? Yeah.
Oh,
so it's... There are other virtual machines out there. This is just one more that takes a different approach to things. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the core architecture of Parrot, some of the things about it that are different. And then I'm going to take a little bit of time explaining the compiler tools and show how they apply to the Python implementation on Parrot. So one of the very fundamental differences in Parrot is that rather than being a stack-based virtual machine like JVM.NET and most heavily used virtual machines out there at the moment, is rather than being stack-based, it is register-based. So if you get down to the very core level of the hardware, it's register-based. I'll show you the illustration. So in a stack-based machine, virtual machine, or interpreter, when you want to perform an operation, you push a series of values onto the stack, perform an operation, and then push the result back onto the stack. So you've got a series of operations there, swapping things back and forth. In a register-based virtual machine, or in the hardware itself, you have a set of storage locations available to you. So when you want to perform an operation, you store your values in certain positions in the register. You perform an operation on them, and then you store the result at a certain position in the register. So at a very low level, what you get is a much smaller number of instructions needed to perform these operations. Instead of all of the operations moving things around back and forth on top of the stack, the values stay in one position and you can operate directly on those values. I mentioned that this is much similar to the hardware underneath, and this is actually an advantage for doing things like just-in-time compilation. Because rather than having to translate a stack-based virtual machine down to the register-based hardware, it's a much more direct mapping. Everything ultimately has to translate down to the hardware. There's a few other optimizations that you can do as well. Register spilling is one. So, of course, if you have a certain number of storage locations, then when you run out of storage locations, you need to somehow store off those values and create new storage locations. About 2 or 3 years into the development of Parrot, we had an aha moment, which is, okay, hardware machines have a fixed number of registers, of storage locations, but this is software. So there's absolutely no reason that we have to have a fixed number of storage locations. And now you have instead, for each, say, subroutine, You can have as many storage locations as you need for that subroutine. So you have as many registers as you need. But we do it per subroutine. So, you know, one subroutine may need 100 registers, another one may need 2. Another very fundamental difference from other virtual machines is that Parrot is based on the concept of continuation passing style control flow. So again, instead of the stack, like JVM or .NET, in a stack-based virtual machine, when you want to perform an operation, you push a return address onto the stack, and then potentially some values that you're passing in. You pop off the values. When you're ready to actually return, you pop off the return address and jump to it. So what you're passing around on the stack is just a little address in memory that says this is where you want to go. This is a source of many security errors. You can, pull too many elements off the stack, push too many back on. You can pull off something that you think is a return address and jump to it, when actually it isn't a return address at all. It was a value that was intended to be passed in. So in Parrot, we use continuations for control flow. So if you start, let's say, in main, and you call the foo subroutine, from main, where you call that foo subroutine, you capture a continuation, which is you capture the entire state of the interpreter into an executable subroutine, package it up, and you pass that continuation into foo. When foo is ready to return to main, it just invokes that subroutine. That restores the entire state of the interpreter as it was before the call to foo, except for the pieces that you need for return values and such from foo. So if you were going to call, so from main you call foo, from foo you call bar. At the point that you call bar, you also capture the entire state of the interpreter, including the previous capture of the entire state of the interpreter. Now, this has a few advantages aside from the security advantages. It has a few optimization advantages. When you're exiting from deeply nested contexts, say subroutine calls, within subroutine calls, 100 levels down, when you want to return to, if you want to return straight to that top level, whether it's because of some exceptional condition or a short circuit, instead of having to roll back the stack 100 levels down, you can actually just invoke that continuation from the very top level and you're immediately restored back to the top level. It's also an advantage for tail recursion. If you have a tail recursive call, which is essentially at the end of the call, you make a call back to the same subroutine, what you can do is instead of creating a new continuation, you just pass along the same continuation all the way down the recursive call, and when you get to the very bottom, it invokes that continuation and returns you all the way back up through the recursion to the top level. If you look at this from the simplest level, it's actually not a huge change, right? So all we've done is we've replaced a stack with a linked list. It's a simple data structure change. The core of the innovation, what makes it so that JVM or .NET couldn't just adopt this feature instantly, is actually designing the core of the interpreter in such a way that you can very, very cheaply and quickly capture a continuation that stores the entire state. So you really do have to think about that from the very roots of the architecture in order to make that possible. So this is a very high-level overview of Parrot. The Parrot VM itself has a series of various subsystems that take care of core pieces of the virtual machine, you know, things like exceptions in advance and object-oriented code. Parrot has a couple of native languages, which I'll show you a little bit of example of. It has a compiler toolkit, which is the compiler toolkit and the grammar engine are the big things that are making it easy for compiler writers. You can think of them in some ways as a replacement for Lex and Yak. So the first native language of Parrot is PASM. This is a very simple assembly language. If you look at the syntax, it's, you know, pretty straightforward. The name of the opcode and a series of registers. And those are actually directly referencing the register. In some ways, you can think of it as, so Parrot compiles everything down to bytecode. And Parrot assembly language is in many ways just an English representation of the bytecode. Pretty much every bytecode instruction has a corresponding assembly language instruction. The next level up is Peer. We would call that an intermediate language. It's not a high-level language like Perl or Python. It's not a low-level language like an assembly language. It's somewhere in between. So it has a few niceties that you wouldn't find in the assembly language, like what appears to be operators, although that right there where it says equals and plus, it looks like an operator, but it's actually just a pure translation of the add opcode. It also does a few things like, you notice that instead of direct registers names, it now has a dollar in front of it. So it no longer actually directly refers to a register. It refers to a virtual register. It's done a lot of things behind the scene, like optimizing when you can reuse a particular register. It gives you a little bit of better self-documentation. You can name variables instead of only using register names. And it has a little bit of sugar for things like subroutine and method calls. So that last line there is actually about 30 lines of assembly language, but it's all packaged up for you when you get into Peer. Now, Peer is the language that most of Parrot's extensions are developed in. So if you get to the compiler tools, they're all developed in Peer. Well, you know, Ruby's just a, like, starts with a P, but it's just got a little schmutz on it. NQP is the next level of language. It is a high-level language, but it's a very lightweight one. It doesn't have all of the fancy features that you would find in Python or Perl or Ruby. It allows you to do things like assignment and, you know, it has print operations. It has basic method calls and things like that. The main place that NQP is used is in the compiler tools themselves as part of the translation layer. I'll talk a little bit more about the translation layer later. It was largely put in place because Peer is just a little bit too low level to be friendly to compiler writers. You know, Peer really is an assembly language underneath. It doesn't have control structures, even. It only has jumps and branches. So we needed something a little bit more friendly.
Does NQP get a Peer first, or does it get direct?
NQP does translate down to Peer. In fact, NQP uses the compiler tools to translate down to Peer. There's a little bit of bootstrapping going on there. The parser grammar engine that I mentioned is one of, it's really one of the crown jewels of Parrot. The syntax for the parser grammar engine is essentially regular expressions. So if you've used regular expressions in any of the dynamic languages, you'll find it basically familiar. But it's also a full recursive descent parser under the hood. It also offers an operator precedence parser. These are recursive descent parsing has been in some ways like the holy grail of compiling for a long time. It's often very slow. But PGE is actually very fast. And the recursive descent parsing is incredibly powerful. If you go from like Lex and Yak to PGE, it's a bit of a revelation. HLL compiler is another part of the Parrot compiler toolkit. It's essentially a base library for compilers. It provides a core set of functionality. It's a way of getting people bootstrapped on creating a compiler. So you can actually create a compiler for a new language in a very few lines of code, just because you're using this library at the core. I'll show you the Python one. It provides a bunch of a series of common features like the ability to just execute code on the command line. It allows us to have a certain amount of standardization between the various different language implementations. So Piney is the Python implementation on Parrot. Why did we call it Piney? Yes, so there was originally Perl on new internal engine, which was Pony. A few years later, we decided just kind of for a gag, kind of as a test case for the compiler tools, to implement Perl 1, and that was Puny. Both because it was very small and because it was, you know, uno, it was one, puny. So when we finally got around to doing the Python implementation, Piney seemed like the perfect code name for it. You can download Piney. It's included in the base tarball for Parrot in the languages directory, languages/Piney. So to build Parrot, you run Perl configure PL and make test. Oh, there's a typo there. That currently the build process for Parrot depends on both Perl having a Perl 5 install and also a Python install. Well, those are two major targets. But when we get down to it, eventually, right after the 1.0 release, one of the feature changes will be eliminate all dependencies on existing languages and purely bootstrap off of Parrot. For the moment, with the developer resources that we have available, we decided that was not the most important feature to implement. So for now, we'll keep the dependencies just for the build process. You can actually compile it to a point that you can ship the tarball without needing a dependency on Python and Parrot, Python and Perl. So to make the language, you go into the Piney languages directory and just say make test, and that'll compile it for you and get it ready to run. So to run your first Python script on Parrot, create a small file, hello.py, and then execute it. Parrot piney.peer hello.py. Now, that piney.peer is actually the Piney compiler, and Parrot is just executing it as the runtime environment. That will change, I'd say in about 2 months, that will change so that you can just call piney hello.py. So piney.py is 67 lines of code. Well, actually, it's about 35 lines of code, and the rest of it's all documentation. This is the core compiler for the language. The very heart of it is these lines here, which says, give me a new HLL compiler object, which we call C, it's the compiler. Tell that compiler object that the language that I'm compiling is Piney. It uses that documentation within the actual compilation process. Then tell it, the file that I'm using for parsing is Piney Grammar, and the one that I'm using for the transformation of the output from the parsing, I'll show you some examples of that in a bit, is the Piney Grammar Actions file. So with those three instructions, it now knows how to compile Python. So the Piney Grammar file starts as grammar.pg. There's three files that you need to compile Python. This is PGE code. So it's the regular expression code. If you've ever looked at the internals of Python, this is going to look fairly familiar to you. The top line is the PGE code. The bottom line is actually the Python grammar definition that Guido made a few years back. There's a few changes. We're using brackets for the non-capturing grouping. You'll see this little angle, the bracket star there. That's an action. So while you're parsing, kind of like Lex and Yak, while you're parsing, you can actually perform some sort of action on the result right there within the body of the regular expression. You could use this to clean up the parse tree or do some annotations. You can also use it to flag certain error conditions. The next file is the actions file, and this is a series of methods. The method name here corresponds directly to the rule name there. So for statement list rule, you have a statement list method. And what this does is it takes the parse tree, the output from the raw parse, and it produces an abstract syntax tree. In this case, you see we're creating a variable node, past var. So you create a new node and tell it what its name is, tell it the scope, in this case package scope, and it's passing in the node just so the node is the actual parse tree, just so it can harvest some information from the actual parse node. So those three files are the entire Python compiler. Okay, so let me show you the demonstration, and then we'll ask for questions. The basic idea. Of a compiler for Parrot is essentially a series of transformations. We try to keep the transformations on the tree level, so you're not going down to a text form. So I'm going to start with a very, very simple example and then one slightly more complex example. So to go from a parse of the number 42, you have the PGE grammar, which is essentially matching a digit. That produces the parse tree. You have another transformation rule at that point to produce the abstract syntax tree. And for most people, that's as far as you ever need to go. The Parrot compiler tools take care of all of the rest of the compilation process once you produce an abstract syntax tree. What's happening internally is another transform down to an opcode syntax tree, and then a third transform down to peer code. Now, at the moment, all the code is actually going through peer before it's executed on the virtual machine. So what you have is a very long series of steps to get from 42 back to 42. But if you start adding in just a tiny bit more complexity, so the same idea, this is an operator precedence parsing rule. So you parse the syntax, and that produces a parse tree, which is very raw, very close to the initial set of rules. From the parse tree, you transform it to an abstract syntax tree. And here you can kind of begin to see some of the semantics of the language. You have an operator and two values for that operator. From that syntax tree, you transform it again. And this is the opcode syntax tree. And this is where you begin to see the complexity come in. So even though at the level of, you know, transforming a single value, it's a simple tree, as soon as you start adding even the tiniest bit of complexity, the opcode syntax tree just explodes. And the process of keeping it as transformations is, it's a nice way of hiding complexity. It's a very powerful way of working with the source code. At the very end, that simple operation, multiplication, produces code that looks something like this. This is the peer code underneath. So that's really about all I have to say. There's a series of examples here in the Parrot distribution. If you want to see a little bit more about peer, you want to see a little bit more about continuations and how they work. The amount of knowledge that you have now is actually enough that you could write a compiler for any language that you wanted to experiment with. Half an hour doesn't seem like it should be enough, considering how long you spend bashing your head over Lex and Yak, but it is. I can show you an example. Oh, I shouldn't bring it. I won't show you an example. You remember I showed you the PGE example with the parsing, and I showed you that there's an action there. You can actually execute any code you want to in that action. And there's also a rule that you can call to throw syntax errors. So that in itself, you can do most of the syntax errors within the parser itself. And then within the actions file, you can also execute any arbitrary code you want. So that would be the semantic analysis phase. Right. Right. First one. Fast. Screamingly fast. We're currently operating about 5 to 10 times speed improvement over the Perl 5 interpreter. Pardon?
What about Python?
Python, we don't have a complete implementation of Python, so it's not very easy to do benchmarks. In certain areas, we are running much faster. In other areas, it's about equivalent. And then there's the areas that we haven't implemented at all, which some of those are quite complex areas and maybe a little bit slower. I don't know yet. The thing to keep in mind is the virtual machine itself is at the moment pretty much entirely unoptimized. There are huge sections of C code that we can get large speed gains out of them if we actually take the time to go through and carefully optimize them. Now, you had a question next.
Yeah, how do you quickly form a continuation that encapsulates the entire state of the virtual machine?
You essentially, you design the virtual machine in such a way that it stores the core context information in a small structure. So you make sure that anything that you need to restore that state can be captured in that small structure. Well, you have to allow some global memory. And obviously, if you have global state, you don't want to reset that when you're, like, it's not quite like small talk where you want to freeze the interpreter down and restart it with no changes. You still want to allow side effects. You want to allow return values from subroutines. You want to actually allow change of state in between the execution and the reinvocation of the continuation.
So you basically just need the register state from all the call stuff.
It's more than just the register state, but yeah, exactly. It's the register state, certain core interpreter information. It's all in the context struct within the interpreter. I don't remember who exactly was next, but you still have your hand up.
Okay, thank you. Allison, you mentioned just then freezing the whole interpreter down. Is there an easy way to take a parent interpreter and to serialize it and put it somewhere and restart it later on?
There is a freeze and thaw, and the interpreter is itself an object that can be frozen and thawed. Mm-hmm. So yes, there are other pieces of information outside of the interpreter object that wouldn't be captured by that.
Things like file handles, for example.
Yeah. So at the moment, we haven't made it a goal to allow the small talk imaging idea. But you could do it with a little bit of work. You need to capture things like the full set of classes in memory at the time that you do the freeze. So we're not doing that at the moment, but you could do it. Oh, here's your hand. Okay.
You mentioned embedded environments. What sort of footprint does it have, and do you think it's possible to run it on there now?
On what?
On NoOS underlying.
Yes. It would be possible to run it without an OS. I mean, if you think about it, the Linux kernel is a virtual machine. So Parrot is also a virtual machine. There are some core pieces of functionality you would have to implement to be able to run it straight. You would have to do away with the flexible sized register sets because you'd want to run directly on the hardware register sets. So that's not really all that difficult because the register spilling code is still in place. You just don't use it very often anymore.
What about memory, like memory?
Let's see. At the moment, the base footprint is 3 megabytes, but that is including all of the parsing code. So if you stripped it out so you were just running bytecode directly and not actually parsing and compiling peer and PASM, you could trim that down quite a lot. Yeah, and depending on what features you needed, you could also strip out a bunch of the C subsystems of Parrot. But again, not a 1.0 release goal, but definitely possible.
One of the problems I've had getting involved in Parrot before is that it keeps changing and moving around, and the documentation similarly lags or leaves implementation. Has that settled down now? Are we going through another churn? Will we have more of that to come?
We're currently going through another churn. I'm working half.
So some of this is new since when I was at it.
Yeah. I'm on a half-time development grant on Parrot. So every month I put out a new design document, and every month I finish one of the core subsystems connected to the design document. So I'll finish the final core design document in March, and I will finish the implementation of the final core subsystem in August. So for now, yes, for the next few months, there's quite a lot of churn. But at that point, the churn will slow down a lot. And that's when we focus on packaging and cleanup for the 1.0 release.
What's the relationship? I mean,
you're next. What's the relationship of? Guido has been very responsive. In fact, he said he thought it would be quite nice to be able to run Python 2.5 and Python 3 on Parrot at the same time, which we can certainly do. So you could use like a 2.5 library from 3.0. We don't have a lot of Python developers working with us on the implementation, and we kind of expect that right now because there is so much churn in the virtual machine itself that we more enlist their help in asking questions. It's like, so should it work this way or this way? But once we pass 1.0, and Python is one of the core languages that we plan to include in the 1.0 release, at that point you can actually invite people from various other language communities to work on the virtual machine itself. I think you've had your hand up for a long time.
So you've mentioned a lot of things that you're not going to do for 1.0. Maybe I missed this at the beginning of the talk, but what does need to happen between now and 1.0? And wait a month, please.
I don't give dates anymore. Oh, yeah, telling you when the last major subsystem is done is the closest I'm going to be to giving you a date. But soon after that. The main thing that has to happen for 1.0, the core subsystems have to be finished. They have to be solidly implemented. We have to have all the features necessary for implementing a language like Python. At the moment, we're pretty close to having all the features done. It's just they're not as solid as you would like. The design has to be stable. So that's why the last design document in March, we have to get it to a point where features aren't changing underneath people, where we can just sort of freeze it and say, this is what you need. So stable API and a core set of features. And we want support for at least two major languages. Python is one of them. Perl 6 is probably the other. And at that point, we can feel free to invite people to use it in production and come and implement their language on it. I don't know how long we've been going, so I'm just going to go from that side to that side. So we do provide the ability to embed static languages. C extensions are one of the core pieces of Parrot. We are not highly optimized for static languages. So like our solution for .NET is that we actually translate .NET bytecode to Parrot bytecode and run it directly. And there are some things that are very fast in a static virtual machine for a static language that we're not even going to try to meet that speed. We've taken the opposite approach of, making the static languages accommodate to the dynamic languages, which is our core goal. It is very important to be able to run the full Python standard library in order to actually act as a substitute for Python in certain environments.
Yeah.
That's critical, yeah. We will probably end up choosing a set of core libraries for 1.0 release and extend from there. There's a different extension mechanism.
I've seen the IPython guys doing an interesting thing where they're making a layer so that you can actually just compile the C extension against the library like user
In fact, we load C libraries directly, dynamically. So with a compatibility layer. So we can do that. It just, the thing is to, you may have to, for certain libraries, you may have to write a little bit of a thunking layer between the Parrot on Python on Parrot code and the C code underneath. I think he already asked a question, so you can come ask me afterwards. But
okay, I think I'm asking the same question in two ways. One is Parrot especially suited to processes with a large number of registers, or to put that another way, is register spilling a big performance hit?
No, register spilling isn't a big performance hit because it used to be critical, so we made it very fast. You just capture the register set and store it off, and then you can restore it again. Thank you very much.